This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Jesse Bard and Luke Davies? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. This case takes place in New South Wales, Australia. In early 2024, 26-year-old Jesse Bard lived in a $3 million rented home in Paddington, which is an upscale suburb of Sydney. He had a successful career, having worked for Channel 10 as a television presenter and reporter for a few different programs. Jesse's last role there was as a red carpet reporter for a television morning show called Studio 10. The show was canceled in December 2023. Jesse also worked as an Australian rules football goal umpire. At some point, Jesse engaged in a sporadic sexual relationship with a 28-year-old man named Beau Lamar Condon. When he was in his late teens and early 20s, Beau was a celebrity blogger. He had posted images with celebrities like Taylor Swift, Selena Gomez, Kim Kardashian, Russell Crowe, Harry Styles, and Ryan Gosling. In 2019, Beau became a police officer in New South Wales. His mother had worked for the police for about 10 years, which may have contributed to Beau's decision. In 2020, Beau was investigated after using a taser on a man, but ultimately cleared of wrongdoing. He continued to work as a patrol officer and had the rank of senior constable. In 2023, the sexual relationship between Jesse and Beau ended, and Beau did not take this very well. By early February 2024, Jesse had a new lover, a 29-year-old flight attendant named Luke Davies. Luke lived in the Waterloo suburb of Sydney. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On Sunday, February 18, 2024, Jesse Bard and Luke Davies were seen by friends at a hotel. They were there for a party for the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Festival. This is the last time they would be seen alive. On Wednesday, February 21, at 11 a.m., a groundskeeper found several personal items in a trash container in Cronulla. This town is just south of Sydney. The items included a credit card, an $8,000 watch, a phone, a wallet, and bloody clothing. The groundskeeper contacted the police, who connected the items to Jesse Bard. After visiting his residence in Paddington, the police found evidence of a struggle, a spent .40 caliber S&W cartridge case on the kitchen counter, bullet holes in the kitchen walls, and a large amount of blood in the kitchen and in a bedroom. The police started to suspect that Beau Lamar Condon may have done something terrible to Jesse and Luke. Here's what the police found during the course of their investigation. On Friday, February 16, 2024, Beau signed out a police-owned handgun from a police station in South Sydney. The spent cartridge case found in Jesse's residence matched this weapon. Beau indicated that he needed the gun for an event involving protest activity, which was scheduled for Sunday. This particular event was patrolled by police officers who were hired privately, like the organizers would pay the government to have the police officers there. On the next day, Saturday, February 17, Beau purchased a surf bag from a store in the Miranda suburb of Sydney. That same day, he deleted his social media accounts. On Monday, February 19, at about 9 a.m., video surveillance captured Beau exiting a black SUV in Paddington, not far from Jesse's residence. At 9:50 a.m., Jesse's neighbors heard gunshots at his home, but did not immediately report this to the police. 4 minutes later, an emergency call was made from the phone of Luke Davies. A man could be heard saying, "Get out, blank off," before the call disconnected. The police tried to find out what happened, but could not locate the phone. Later that same day, Beau returned the firearm he had taken on February 16 to the police station, purchased a second surf bag, and rented a white Toyota minivan from the Sydney airport. The minivan was captured on video surveillance in front of Jesse's home. On Tuesday, February 20, Bell had a conversation with an acquaintance and allegedly made partial admissions about some type of homicidal activity. Jesse's phone was used to send text messages to his roommates saying that he was moving to Perth in Western Australia and asking them to sell or throw away his belongings. The police believe that Bo sent these messages. On Wednesday, February 21, the day the police started their investigation, Bo and a female friend drove to a rural property in Bungonia, which is 2 hours southwest of Sydney. Along the way, Jesse purchased an angle grinder and a padlock from a hardware store. Bo used the angle grinder to cut a padlock on the gate to the property, drove onto the property in his rented van, and remained there for about a half hour. Before he left, he put the new padlock he purchased on the gate. The police said the female friend was not involved in Bo's activity. She didn't know what he was doing. At 11 p.m., Bo purchased weights from a department store. The police believe that he returned to the rural property after this. On Thursday, February 22, Bo drove to the residence of a fellow police officer named Renee. Her residence was in Newcastle, which is 2 hours north of Sydney. Bo asked Renee for a garden hose to clean out the rented van. Renee stated that Bo appeared to be sleep-deprived and he was rambling. He indicated that the van was full of blood and needed to be cleaned. In addition, he said something about how bodies were floating in a dam and they wouldn't sink. The police stated that Renee was not involved in the crime. On Friday, February 23, at 10:39 a.m., Bo turned himself in at a police station in Sydney. He was charged with 2 counts of murder. The police searched for the bodies of Jesse and Luke without success. On Tuesday, February 27, Bo drew the police a map of where he disposed of the bodies. This led to the discovery of the remains of Jesse and Luke in Bungonia. The bodies were found behind a mound of dirt on a gravel road. At the time making this video, Bo remains in jail, awaiting trial.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I want to take a moment to tell you about my podcast, Carol Costello Presents Blind Rage. In 1984, a woman named Phyllis Cottle was abducted in broad daylight, tortured, and left to die in a burning car in Akron, Ohio. At the time, I was a rookie reporter covering this horrific story. Since then, I've reported every kind of crime imaginable. I've been able to leave most of them at work, but not this one. The one that buried itself under my skin and stayed put. Phyllis Cottle was a badass woman, and I want to tell you her story. A production of Evergreen Podcasts and signature title of the Killer Podcast Network, you can find Carol Costello Presents Blind Rage wherever you get your podcasts. Discover more great true crime and paranormal programming at killerpodcast.com.
Now moving to my analysis. Here are my thoughts on a few areas that stood out to me in this case. Item number one. People who knew Bo found him to be mysterious and bizarre. He earned between $80,000 and $90,000 a year as a police officer, but his spending habits were highly inconsistent with that salary. He drove luxury vehicles, took lavish vacations, and owned expensive clothing and accessories made by designer brands. With no clear source of wealth, people started to wonder if he had a secret boyfriend. Bo told people that he was a celebrity blogger, and money came with that job. Even at his most popular point, Bo was not really a well-known celebrity blogger. He was by no means famous, but perhaps he wanted to be. For example, Bo had a history of exaggerating how close he was to celebrities. He told his friends that he owned a swimwear brand, and he claimed that he had been trained for the Close Protection Unit. This unit comprises police officers who guard dignitaries and celebrities. Item number two, in the time leading up to his death, Jesse Bard told his friends that he was being stalked and his residence had been broken into multiple times. In August 2023, an intruder accessed Jesse's phone and deleted his contacts before leaving. The police, of course, believe this intruder was Beau. This behavior is consistent with a resentful stalker. This type of stalker intimidates and terrorizes a lover to regain power and control. Sometimes resentful stalkers transform into predatory stalkers, which is something that may have happened in this case. Item number 3, Beau's attorney has indicated that mental health will be a factor in his defense, but did not reveal any specific mental health symptoms. There's not much information available about Beau's mental state, although there was one report indicating he was confronted by a senior officer in a police station while reminiscing alone. This is unusual, but certainly not evidence of mental illness. Some of Beau's behavior appears to be consistent with disorganized thinking. Perhaps he could make the argument that he didn't know what he was doing. For example, it doesn't make sense that he invested so much energy in hiding the bodies only to implicate himself in the murders. For the most part, however, I think Beau is going to have a challenging time convincing a jury that his mental health symptoms fully explained his alleged crime. The main problem for Beau is the premeditation part. For example, he removed a gun owned by the police and returned it after the murders. He took ammunition from a shooting range and replaced the cartridges that were used in the alleged crime. Beau purchased a surfboard bag before the murders and another one afterward. He rented a van and later cleaned it out with a hose. He purchased an angle grinder to gain entry to a rural property and a padlock to conceal this entry. And Beau was frustrated when weighing down the bodies in water didn't work, so he moved the bodies to another location. It is reasonable to believe that Beau knew that his alleged behavior was wrong, and he was trying to escape responsibility. Item number 4. This case featured a few people who had no involvement in the crime, but who failed to demonstrate a sufficient level of critical thinking skills. For example, the female friend who accompanied Beau in the white van should have realized that something was amiss. She rode in this van with Beau, and there was a blue tarp in the back. He drove to a remote area and cut through a padlock with an angle grinder. When he returned, the tarp was not in the back of the van anymore. The police reported that this was a long-time female friend. Didn't she notice that some of Beau's behavior was bizarre or out of the ordinary? Is this something he did on a regular basis? Jesse's roommates also disregarded pretty obvious warning signs. They entered Jesse's residence after the murders and saw that it was disorganized. There were red stains on the floor, a surf bag, and a blue tarp. They thought that the red stains were beet juice that Jesse had spilled. I'm curious as to what they made of the bullet holes in the kitchen wall and the spent cartridge case on the counter. Did they think that a beet fired the gun, or maybe the beet was an intruder who was shot, like it was unable to beat someone to the draw? Maybe the roommates missed the bullet holes and the spent case, but even so, the circumstances warranted further investigation. This demonstrates how far it is from people's minds that someone they know would be involved in a serious crime, whether as a perpetrator or as a victim. When a problem is inconceivable, clear evidence of the problem tends to be ignored. Item number 5, what do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Beau had traits of vulnerable narcissism, like being vindictive, insecure, petty, self-centered, impulsive, irresponsible, and having a sense of entitlement. He was not willing to tolerate losing his sexual relationship with Jesse and decided to murder him. When he arrived to commit the murder, he discovered that Luke was there, so he killed him as well. I don't think that Beau planned on this because he had only purchased one surf bag before arriving. Beau worked diligently to cover up his crime, but the same personality characteristics which led to the crime also interfered with concealing it. Now moving to my final thoughts. This murder case is unusual in the sense that both Beau and Jesse had careers that placed them in the spotlight. But as far as the crime itself, the motive was not that out of the ordinary. It sounds like Beau was a resentful and predatory stalker who refused to take no for an answer. The most obvious warning sign that Jesse had available was the stalking behavior, but there's no way he could have predicted that Beau would have escalated to murder. Jesse's romantic partner, Luke, did not have access to any warning signs unless Jesse told him something. Luke was murdered for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. He tried to call the police for help, but the wrong police officer was already there. If Beau is in fact guilty, this case illustrates the level of depravity and determination he maintained. Most killers who are serious about getting away with a crime like this would have waited upon seeing another person with the victim. But Beau is not going to let anyone stop him from getting his revenge.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
Allegedly is back for season 2, a new crime every time. In each episode of Allegedly, you'll hear a crime told to you by the person who experienced it, intermingled with actor portrayals, original music, immersive soundscapes, to create a cinematic experience for your ear. Season 2's stories include a young woman finding salvation in God, only to realize the leader of her church was running a sex cult. A case of a con artist swindling a kindly older man until he couldn't do anything to stop her. A landlord exploiting a mentally disabled man and keeping him a virtual prisoner. An act of bullying spinning a promising young man's life into total chaos. And a luxury boat captain inexplicably detained in a foreign prison with seemingly no hope of ever getting out. New episodes release every other week. Look for Allegedly from Voyage Media anywhere you listen to podcasts.